Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Efficient and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it'll take you to a page where you can download and listen and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a PDF file. Click on it, download it, print it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains that reality management worksheet process, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We encourage people to do that soon and often because then it usually brings up questions or comments or testimonials, and we hope you do that and give us a call at 563-999-3581. When you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code, and we'll have a conversation. I should say, I kind of skipped over it, that I use that tool in my life and have been using it to great advantage for pushing 17 years now to manage my emotions and turn any negative emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us was gifted upon our creation. And the point of this work is to help people step into their own awareness of their own unique access to that infallible guidance system. And if you do that, your life's going to go better. If you learn to tap into it and follow it, I believe your life would get better the way mine has gotten better since using these tools. And we've also made the commitment this year to work through the Course in Miracles lessons in the workbook. And today is the 98th day. And the lesson for today reads, I will accept my part in creation's plan for salvation. The commentary reads, today is a day of special dedication. Today we take a stand on but one side today. Today we side with the capital T truth and we let illusions go. We will not vacillate between the two, but we take a firm position with the one true view of life. We dedicate ourselves to the truth with a capital T and to salvation as the creation planned it. We will not argue that it is something else. We will not seek for it where it is not. In gladness, we accept it as it is and we take part in what was assigned to us by creation. How happy to be certain. All of our doubts we lay aside today and take our stand with certainty of purpose and with thanks. Doubt is gone and surety has come. We have a mighty purpose to fulfill, and we have been given everything we need with which to reach the goal. Not one mistake stands in our way, for we have been absolved from errors. All our sins are washed away by realizing that they were mistakes, and I'll add, they were mistakes in perception. They were illusions. Not a mistake, and that's why we broke a rule, but the whole idea that we had sinned was an illusion. It goes on to say, the guiltless have no fear, for they are safe and they recognize their safety. They do not appeal to magic nor invent escapes from fancied threats that have no reality. The guiltless, those who understand their perfect safety and their wholeness, rest in quiet certainty that they will do what it is given them to do. They do not doubt their own ability because they know their function will be filled completely in the perfect time and place. These people took a stand, which we will take today, that we may share their certainty and thus increase that certainty by accepting it for ourselves. Those people who have accepted this truth, those guiltless people, they will be with us. And they will gladly offer us all that they've learned and every gain that they've made. Those who are still uncertain will also join us, borrowing on our certainty, and that will make that certainty stronger still. While those as yet unborn will hear the call we heard and answer it when they have come to make their choice again. We do not choose but for ourselves today. Is it not worth 5 minutes of your time each hour to be able to accept the happiness that God has given you? Is it not worth 5 minutes hourly to recognize your special function here? Is it not 5 minutes but a small request to make in terms of gaining a reward so great that it has no measure? You have made 1,000 losing bargains at least. Here's an offer guaranteeing you your full release from pain of every kind and joy the world does not contain. You can exchange a little of your time for peace of mind and certainty of purpose. And you have the promise of complete success. Each hour today, give creation your tiny gift of but 5 minutes. Creation will give you the words you use in practicing today's idea, the deep conviction and the certainty that you lack. I will accept my part in creation's plan for salvation. And in each 5 minutes you spend with creation and that thought, creation accepts your words and gives them back to you, all bright with faith and confidence so strong and steady that they will light the world with hope and gladness. So, A Course in Miracles experiment by Pam Grout, chapter 98, says, today I side with truth, capital T, truth. She quotes Benani Ray as saying, nothing outside can give you salvation. You have to light your own lamp. You have to know the miniature universe that you yourself are. Pam writes, one of the main tools in the ego's arsenal is telling me that my salvation is a huge burden, or that doing the daily lesson is a huge burden, that it's a time-sucking sacrifice and a cumbersome chore. Maybe your ego mentioned that to you, too. It goes something like this. You've got much better things to do than stop every hour to take a stand for salvation. And besides, salvation is for boring church types. Why bother taking a stand for A Course in Miracles? That's for losers. Not to mention, you're already way too busy. So today, as I willingly play my part in the grand scheme of salvation, I remember the following. Salvation equals joy and love and fun. Salvation means all the important stuff is already taken care of. The sun comes up every morning and I don't have to do a thing. The sun warms the soil and turns seeds into food and provides light for me to go out and have a good time. My heart beats without me having to remind it. My body heals itself every time I scrape my knee. And it also heals everything else when I don't focus on the problem and block the flow. The big stuff, all the important stuff, goes on seamlessly without me having to do a darned thing. Course in Miracles Experiment by Pam Grout, Lesson 98. So, that's our suggestion for today for those who want to keep working with the Course in Miracles, to remember 5 minutes at the beginning of every hour or anywhere in the hour that we can choose to accept our part in creation's plan for salvation. We can allow the flow of life moving in through, as, and around us to be the source of our joy, our aliveness, just as it is the source of our very existence. And we have 48 minutes left for conversation. And boy, are there topics to converse about. There are seemingly an endless stream of people struggling. And if you're one of those people and or you want to question what we have been discussing here for the past 10 years, 5 days a week, 1 hour a day, give us a call, 563-999-3581, and press 1 on your phone. Seems pretty odd to me at this stage of the game to be saying that we've been doing this show 5 days a week, 1 hour a day for over 10 years now, but that's the actuality of it. I was As I have talked about, I've been going through the book Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And there's a section titled Decals, and I'm going to read the shorter one before that about knots. K-N-O-T-S. And this is in honor of her wife, Abby. Glennon writes, "Tonight, you and I are in a minister's office somewhere in Texas. We're chatting before I go out to speak to the waiting crowd. You don't like these steepled, echoing rooms, but you come with me anyway. You sit in the front pew and listen to me talk about God and the hunches I have about her. You think I'm wrong to believe that there is a God, but it's what you love and need me for. You borrow my faith like we borrow our next-door neighbor's Wi-Fi. The minister said something that made you feel safe. You looked down at your hands and you said, 'I don't feel completely comfortable in churches. When I was little, I knew I was gay. I had to choose church, my mom, and God, or myself. And I chose myself.' 'Damn right,' the minister said, and she cleared her throat. I smiled at her, but 'damn right' wasn't exactly it. So I turned to you and I touched your hand and I said, 'Babe, wait. Yes, you were little. When you were little, your heart turned away from the church in order to protect itself. You remained whole instead of letting them dismember you. You held on to who you were born to be instead of contorting yourself into who they told you to be. You stayed true to yourself instead of abandoning yourself. When you shut down your heart to that church, you did it to protect God in you. You did it to keep your wild. Your thought that decision made you bad was in error, but that decision made you holy. Abby, what I'm trying to say is that when you were very little, you did not choose yourself instead of God and church. You chose yourself and God instead of church. When you chose yourself, you chose God. They are inseparable. When you walked away from church, you took God with you. God is in you. And tonight, you, me, and God, we're just visiting the church. We three came back for a visit to offer folks here hope by telling stories about brave people like you who fight their whole lives to stay as whole and free as God made them. When we're done tonight, you and I will go and God will go with us. In the next section, she writes about decals. When I was a young mother, exhausted, isolated, and dripping with children, I got a postcard from a local church offering free babysitting during the service. My then husband and I attended the following Sunday and found coffee, breakfast, music, a nursery, inspiring speakers, and welcoming couples everywhere. This church had identified every challenge in a young family's life and fixed them all for an hour. It felt like heaven at first. Then one day the preacher started discussing the sins of homosexuality and abortion as if they were the pillars upon which this church is built. My insides caught fire. After the service, I contacted the preacher and set up a meeting. I asked him, quote, "Why, if your church is based on the Jesus who spoke incessantly about orphans and widows, demilitarization, immigrants, the sick, the outcast, and the poor, why are you choosing abortion and gayness to hang your hat upon?" After many circular arguments, he looked at me, sighed, and smiled. He said, "You're a smart woman. What you say makes sense in the ways of the world, but God's ways are not our ways. You must not lean on your own understanding. You seem to have a good heart, but the heart is fickle. Faith is about trusting." Glennon writes, "Do not think, do not feel, do not know. Mistrust your own heart and mind and trust us. That is faith." He wanted me to believe that trusting him was trusting God, but he was not my connection to God. My heart and mind were both my connections to God. If I shut those down, I'd be trusting the men who led this church instead of trusting God. I'd be relying on their understanding. The thing that gets me thinking and questioning most deeply is a leader who warns me not to think or question. I won't passively outsource my faith and my children's faith to others. I am a mother and I have responsibilities to all children, not just my own. When hate or division is being spread in our religious situations, we have three choices, or our religious institutions, we have three choices. Number one, remain quiet, which means we agree. Number two, loudly challenge power, and work like hell to make change. Number three, take our families and leave. But there is no more silently disagreeing while poison is being pumped from the pulpits and seeping beneath our children's skin. So many parents have come to me and said, "My kid just told me she's gay. We've been sitting in this church for a decade. How must she have felt hearing what our leaders thought of her and assuming her mother agreed? How do I undo what she heard there? How do I convince her that I never really agreed with any of it and that she's perfect just the way she is?" The God memos we get as kids are carved into our hearts. They are hard as hell to buff out. Everyone owes it to herself, to her people, to the world, to examine what she's been taught to believe, especially if she's going to choose beliefs that condemn others. She has to ask herself questions like, "Who benefits from me believing this?" So after that preacher told me to quit thinking, I began thinking harder. I did my research, and it turns out that the memo he was trying to pass on me, quote, "A good Christian bases her faith on disapproving of gays and abortion," close quotes. That memo started being issued only 40 years ago. In the 1970s, a few rich, powerful, white, outwardly straight men got worried about losing their right to continue racially segregating their private Christian schools and therefore maintaining their tax-exempt status. Those men began to feel their money and power being threatened by the civil rights movement. In order to regain control, they needed to identify an issue that would be emotional and galvanizing enough to unite and politically activate their evangelical followers for the first time. They decided to focus on abortion. Now, before then, a full 6 years after Roe v. Wade and the Supreme Court decision about Roe v. Wade, the prevailing evangelical position was that life began with the baby's first breath at birth. Most evangelical leaders had been indifferent to the court's decision in Roe v. Wade, and some were cited as supporting the ruling. Not anymore. They wrote a new memo using freshly feigned outrage and rhetoric, calling for a holy war to lead the nation back to a moral stance that made America great. They sponsored a meeting of 15,000 pastors called the Religious Roundtable to train pastors on how to convince their congregations to vote for anti-choice, anti-gay candidates. This is how they disseminated the memo down to the evangelical ministers who passed it down to pews across America. The memo read, "To be aligned with Jesus, to have family values, to be moral, one must be against abortion and gay people and vote for the candidate that is anti-abortion and anti-gay." Now, President Ronald Reagan, who was governor of California, as governor of California, had signed into law one of the most liberal abortion laws in the country. He began using the language from the new memo. Evangelicals threw their weight behind him and voted in a block for the first time to elect President Reagan. The religious right was born. The face of the movement was the pro-life, pro-family value stance of millions, but the blood running through that movement's veins was the racism and the greed of a few. That is how white evangelicals became the most powerful and influential voting bloc in the United States, and the fuel of the American white supremacy engine. That's how evangelical leaders get away with stunning hypocrisy of keeping their money, racism, misogyny, classism, nationalism, weapons, war, and corruptions, while purporting to lead in the name of a man who dedicated his life to ending war, serving orphans and widows, healing the sick, welcoming immigrants, valuing women and children, and giving power and money away to the poor. That is also why all political candidate must do to earn the Evangelical Alliance is to claim to be anti-abortion and anti-gay. Even if the candidate is a man who hates and abuses women, who stockpiles money, rejects immigrants, and incites racism and bigotry, a man who lives in every way antithetical to the Jesus teachings, they can still get the support of that group and that voting bloc. All they have to do is keep pushing the memo. Don't think, don't feel, don't know. Just be against abortion and gays and keep on voting. That's how to live like Jesus. Glennon writes, all the devil has to do to win is convince you he's God. My evangelical friends insist to me that their opposition to abortion and queerness was born in them. They are sincere and convinced. But I wonder, we all believe our religious beliefs were written on our hearts and in the stars. We don't often stop to consider that most of the memos we live by were actually written by highly motivated men. So, perhaps that stimulates some thoughts, some comments, some questions. We're here to try and help people remove whatever roadblocks might be in the way of them getting directly into contact with their internal wisdom. Sometimes we can do research about the history of events in our life and the people that have been teaching us to believe what they've been teaching us to believe. And sometimes we just need to ask a question and get quiet and sink lower, sink in for the answer. Because as the Kabbalah's manuscript and the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery all teach us, we have been given an infallible guidance system. And it's an internal system, and if we let it, it will give us infallible guidance for improving our lives. If we turn to the external, there will never be a shortage of people that want to tell us how to live our lives. And so here we're encouraging people to breathe, take 100% responsibility for the emotions and responses they create. Whenever those emotions or responses are strong and intense and of a negative nature, use tools to dismantle the false perceptions and the traumatic energies and false beliefs that underlie those negative emotions, and give themselves a greater chance to perceive accurately. How do you know when you're perceiving accurately? Well, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was that my guidance, I'm going to know when I'm receiving true guidance, because when it comes, it's going to come with calm. It's going to come with a certainty. It's going to come with a peaceful knowing, even if there might be on the fringes some plausible fear about dealing with the outcome if I act on that knowledge, on that inner knowing. So, you know, it isn't that I get my inner knowing and I'm always filled with, you know, excitement and joy, because my inner knowing might tell me, you know what, Tim, the thing to do is to read that Pam Grout section of that book. And then another part of me goes, yeah, but, you know, that some people might say you're pushing a political agenda there and it could create a ruckus. But if there's a calm certainty, then I'm probably listening to my inner wisdom, to my inner knowing. And it's possible to have that inner knowing and then in the next moment have my cross-generational patterns of fear and trepidation get resonated. There's a woman and her husband that sing, and I've been connected with them through Facebook because I have friends that are musicians, and she's quite the emotional feeler, and sings beautifully, but also their last name is Beng, B-E-N-G-S-O-N, apostrophe, or S-O-N-S, Beng Sons. And so she posted something yesterday about going to get her vaccine shot. And she sings when she gets these insights, intuitions, et cetera. And the writing that she did prior to this was that, you know, she needed to sing about fear because today she and her husband had the total miraculous gift of getting their first vaccine dose. And I'm scared about it. I trust the science totally, but my particular voluptuous story includes body trauma, including medical trauma. And that makes it a workful act to entrust my body to other folks. I felt ashamed that I was afraid. But I was held beautifully by family. And I'm always, always trying to remember there is no shame in the truth of the body. So as she talks, she sings, and the words that she's talking, she acknowledges in her singing, in her chanting singing, that we have inherited through our bloodline this mind-body energy system that has the gift of fear and the fight-or-flight response, which was there to keep us safe when there were physical threats. And so I can honor that fight, flight, or freeze response and acknowledge it and not obey it. And that is a huge gift. Many people do not reach that level of understanding. Many people are so compelled by the intensity of the response without the knowledge that many times that's an auto response, that's a trauma trained response and not exactly true guidance when I have fear come up like that. So as I try to pass along in this work and all the other work I do, the things that have worked best for me. And one of the things that's really helped me move my work to the next level is that slowing down and checking in and learning at deeper and deeper levels to listen for the subtle energies and the subtle cues, and then to understand that if I'm getting true guidance, it comes with a calm certainty. And there might, in the next moment, be a fearful spinning of thoughts about projecting into the future, but what if this and what if that? But that certainty, that calm certainty is going to be there first. And as this woman sings about in her little chanting, it's possible to acknowledge and to honor that fear response and understand I don't have to obey it. I can honor it and not obey it. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. It's completely impossible for me to think that there is no comment or question after what I've already read and shared. So let us know what your thoughts are. 563-999-3581. Susan, bless your heart. What's on your mind?
Am I really the only person pressing one?
Say what?
Am I really the only one pressing one? Yeah.
Well, almost at the same moment, someone else did. So I will I'm going to turn them on and see who this is. I don't know who it is, but 678, you're in the air.
Linda Westman, and right now I'm in Antigua, Guatemala, sitting on this perch overlooking mountains and houses and a little bit of gardens. And I love this topic. It is so powerful. And I'm in a quandary about this fight-flight response. And I want to honor that as well. And I understand that it's generations of programming. And for that calm certainty to move back into the calmness and then check with that. And then when there's an issue about information and going out and seeking and saying, okay, I want more information. I don't trust the medical people now. Bless their hearts. They're my friends. And, you know, if somebody's going to give you a chunk of money, are you going to write down, who cares? The person's dead. Why? What does it matter what they died of, really?
All
so
right, hold
my
on.
Friend,
hold on, Linda.
Yeah.
Hold on, please.
Yeah.
You've completely lost me when you're talking about someone's going to give you a chunk of money. I'm lost. Can you please get me back on track?
I need.
What are you referring to?
Well, I'm coming back on track. I would like to be totally connected to that higher aspect and be operating out of calm certainty at every moment. And it's not easy. And I was wondering if you had, well, breathing. So I actually know the answer to my question, because if I just stop when I feel an emotion and start breathing, and moving back into this sense of calmness, then I am tuning into my soul again. But I would like you to share. You have been sharing. I don't think I have a question. I just want to express my appreciation, Dr. Tim. And I want to be connected 100% of the time. That's all. I'm expressing my desire on the radio and expressing my appreciation to you.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you're finding it useful, and I think that my experience has been when I make a statement like I want to be this for 100% of the time, the only way I can get there is in this moment. So if I find myself in a moment being somewhat less than connected to that loving nature, then I use the tools, and I would and invite you to do the same.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
And I
well, you're
totally welcome. I want to say thank you to Susan too. You definitely contribute in so many ways, both of you.
Oh,
bravo.
Linda, have a great time in that beautiful place. Wow.
Hi. Yeah, if it's to be, it's up to me. And knowing this is a good opportunity to practice what all the tools, you know, I have time. I'm away from the normal distractions. So to line up the tools and have them to be easy to jump into and use. In other words, taking the course establishes a habit. And Dr. Michael having the class review is a good way to review it. It's such a blessing to have the support for the repetition, just like a child needs the repetition. He mentioned that when you're learning to drive a stick shift, how you can't do it right off the bat. It requires the repetition. And therefore, I'm happy to hear once again to use the tools. And it's like I want to have an easy, like when I get my vitamins out, I line them up, and my friend Howard reminds me, he takes his medicine, and so I take mine. But what I'm saying right now is I like an easy way to apply these tools. You know, have them out in front of me. So it's my work to do, and I can do that. And it's all on the website. So that's what I'll do. Thank you. I will practice
all right.
Getting on the website. Appreciate it. I'm off. Thank
you. All right. Blessings. Thank you, Linda. And Susan, what was your comment before the sidebar with Linda?
Well, a lot of what you've been talking about. I'll start with a question I had before you started at all. It was from the lesson itself. There's a sentence in there on lesson 98. This is the workbook itself, not Pam Grout. The guiltless have no fear, for they are safe and recognize their safety. They do not appeal to magic. That's the question. Nor invent escapes from fancy threats without reality. Could you explain do not appeal to magic?
Right. Well, they don't need to. I mean, when you are resting in the knowledge of your perfect safety, there's no need to appeal to any outside force. You're not looking for change. You're just and that, you know, the whole thing here is that this language gets a little bit touchy here and there, and of course, when it's not in accord with Dr. Michael Rice's regulatory speech, sometimes it gets a little. And when it goes on here to say, they do not appeal to magic nor invent escapes from fancied threats without reality. If you don't slow that down, you don't know what is without reality.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the escapes? Right. Is it the threat that has no reality? Is it the magic? And so what this whole point is, that's why so many times when we read from the Course in Miracles and they talk about, you know, your infallibility and your attack thoughts attack your infallibility and all of this. It gets,
yeah.
You know, when you start using negatives and double negatives and triple negatives,
yeah.
It gets confusing. So I just try to rewrite that and speak it in my own head as, when it talks about my infallibility, what they're saying is my perfect safety. And they're saying
yeah.
There is no way to attack my perfect safety. There's nothing to fear
mm-hmm.
because there is only the creation. And so
mm-hmm.
here I read this and I thought, the guiltless have no fear. Well, guiltless, you know, if you're just talking about that using our English words, you might think about, you know, a psychopath because they go out and they do all these things and they have no guilt. That's not what
right.
they're referring to here. They're
right.
talking about those who know their perfect safety have no fear. Those who know they've never done anything that was sinful, they can't be guilty of sin, that there is only the flow of creation. Those people who are rooted in this deep truth that the Course is trying to get us to observe and experience for ourselves, they don't create guilt. They don't create a need for magic to save them, or they don't create a need to invent escapes because they haven't created something that seems to threaten them, because none of that has any actuality, to use Dr. Michael Rice's words, instead of there has no reality. All of this stuff about fear is the creation of the egoic mind that's trying to pretend that it's separate from what created it. And none of that ever happened. So at this level of scale, this course is trying to get us to just relax and understand it's all okay.
Mm-hmm.
And when you generate a thought of, you know, you generate a thought of threat or attack, you're creating it all in your own head. There's no possibility for attack except the one you've created. What was the word that the last few lessons have been using so heavily? Grievance. Right?
Mm, yeah.
And if I hold on to my grievance, I'm ignoring this energy of love, this energy of creation, this unity of all things.
Mm.
So does that help with the question you had there? Don't appeal to magic. Don't look for escapes, because there's nothing that you need to escape from. You're whole and safe and complete just as you are.
Okay, well, now it takes us right into some very practical things. And you said a couple of things that feed into it. And Linda, too, she was mentioning the COVID vaccine, and there was more fodder for discussion there, but she didn't go into her distrust or fear or whatever it was about getting the vaccine or not. And of course, there's a lot of discussion about that. Then before that, you had mentioned the Banksons, the woman who chants, and she chanted her way into accepting the fear that she had, bodily fear from trauma ages ago, and how she went through getting the vaccine anyway with the support of her friends. And I'm thinking, and then you said something about how if you have real guidance, you will just know it. You'll have a sense of calm. Well, bringing all that together and with the idea of getting a shot, I have gotten both shots. I felt confident to get them, partly because there are medical people in my family who explained to me about all the way from the integrity of the scientists who've done the research, the safety of the very organic natural material that goes into the vaccine, that it's not some foreign chemical that could hurt other things. Of course, there may be side effects, and I won't go on to that. But what I'm saying is I went into getting the shot. My personal feeling was good to get the shot. It's no guarantee for health forever, but it's good to get the shot, protect other people from your being a carrier or getting sick yourself, infecting others, whatever. I've worn a mask for the same reason. That's my inner guidance. And where am I going with this question now?
The only place I would think you would go with it is then to say, but I still have reservations, or I still have fears, or I have doubts. And what would those be?
I'm not aware of having fears and doubts, but I want to honor, and I do honor people in the other position who are saying, I have a very strong gut guidance feeling that taking that vaccine is wrong. Now, whether it's because the pharmaceutical company is out to make money and out to get you and they're going to do anything they can to do that, I'm not sure Linda was going there with that, or a friend of mine who's a naturopath who's had Lyme disease and a very, very precarious immune system, who has found a way to be well, and she doesn't want to get the vaccine because she's afraid that it will knock her sideways, and she's hoping that the forces in the universe will just allow her to be one of the ones not to get it. I don't know her stance on vaccines in general. I think Michael's is that even the Salk vaccine was not a great thing, even though the evidence looks as if, you know, he wiped out polio with it. One fell
okay,
through.
So let me get you back on track here, or try anyway.
Sorry, Tim.
So this is not a show about vaccines or vaccine safety. This is a show about what emotions do I create when I come into these discussions with people? What fears do I create? What resentments? And how might I use the tools to dismantle them? right? Because
we've
had this on the support groups before, and my message to people is, this is not a show about or a support group about the right or wrong, good or bad of this medical or that medical or this political or that political. This is a show about, if I encounter some ideas and in response to them I generate fear or hostility, sadness or guilt, shame or resentment, you know, any kind of grievance, according to the Course in Miracles lesson we've been reading, it's my job to dismantle that. It's my job to understand that when those energies are active in my mind, it is not possible for me to be perceiving accurately. Mm-hmm. And so when I use the tools and I dismantle the judgments, and I just mean any kind of judgment that creates a tension in me, judgment being very, very different from discernment. Judgment means I've decided one is right and one is wrong, and I know what's right, and I've got a tension in me, and I'm ready to fight for what I believe. If I have that in my system, I know I'm in error.
That's good, Dr. Kim. I feel reined in. Yes, I have a fear that one of us, one side, is wrong. And conversely, if it is the absolutely globally best thing, for instance, to get a vaccine or to buy red cars, it doesn't matter what, then why isn't everybody doing it? And what am I not learning from this? Yeah.
Well, but the point of this work would be, when you have that and you say, okay, basically what's supposed to happen to make the world spin around is everybody's supposed to buy a red car. But they're not. Some of those people are getting black and blue and yellow cars, and that's ridiculous. When that happens, when you have that realization, oh, my gosh, the world's going to hell in a red car or a yellow car. What energy
so funny,
do you experience in your system when that happens that you might dismantle by using the tools? That's all this work is about.
Yep. That's good.
That's all this
That's
work
good.
Needs to be about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good.
I remember I was just put in mind of the Dr. Seuss book about the one people on one side of the fence. They were they knew enough to butter their bread butter side down.
Mm-hmm.
But the other people on the other side of the fence, they were ridiculous. You know, they buttered their bread butter side up. And they had wars about this, and they escalated with their weaponry. And it's just the brilliance of it, not to say that everything that Dr. Seuss wrote was brilliant, but the brilliance of a book like that is to say, look at what we do with our judgment.
Yeah. And that's where this went. It did. I thought it was well-veiled, well-hidden. But there it is. It has to do with fear, and I can go do my worksheet. I feel like a little dog with tail between legs. So.
Well, I would be happy to help you dismantle that negative judgment of yourself as a little dog with your tail between your legs, and understand that, you know, it could be viewed as a hopeful thing. You know, I routinely deal with people in my private practice and in the support groups and occasionally on the internet show where they're just so stuck in their anger and they're so stuck in their fear.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to be able to say, you know what, you could do a mind shifter, you could do EFT tapping, you can do a reality management worksheet, and probably get a shift in those energies that are keeping you stuck in your grievance or in your judgment or in your knowing. But the knowing is not, you know, each of us has this infallible guidance system that can direct us to the the capital T truth of when our knowing is in error, and that guidance system is any negative emotion, any tension, any pain, any frustration. And it is not necessary for me to generate that intense negative emotion in order to take an action on what I have, what my inner truth is telling me is the best thing. And the problem is we're living in a culture that tells us, you know, get angry and get motivated and use your anger to go out and fight for your cause. And of course, we've been trained to believe that's what we should do, so we do it. But part of what I was reading from the book Untamed is how it might be much better for us to question what we've been taught, to question the memo we've been given about religion, about politics, and about sexuality, and about question it all and learn to go inside, to calm, to sink deeper, and use as your internal guidance to let you know if you're on track or not, whether or not you have a calm certainty, a calmness with that knowing.
That's a good guide, and it can be just yours. See, I go right from that. If I'm calm and I have a certainty, then it's universal, and that's not true.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Because there are people who are conditioned in very different ways, who've had very different life experiences. One of the things that comes up in my mind right very quickly is we have a person who had a very traumatic childhood, and she ended up learning it wasn't safe for her to speak up. And literally, physically, it wasn't safe for her. She would get, you know, backhanded across the room at 4 years old, or she watched, you know, serious life-threatening or maiming violence happened to her older sibling. So she learned, be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for a person like that, her challenge might be to speak up more and more quickly and not worry so much about the format and whether or not she's saying it in the most respectful way. And for somebody else who's been raised in a very loud way and encouraged to just speak up and be disrespectful and be a bully, their challenge might be to take a breath and stay calm and swallow down the urge to speak out and take an inner path to sort things out before they can get restored to that true knowing. So it's not a universal thing. And each of us has to work to find a way to be able to hear and then follow our inner guidance.
Great. And that was my other question is, did you have a particular reason for reading the Untamed part? I know you went back and forth in your mind, but actually it sounds as if that Untamed part is just you've chosen, like the vaccine, you've chosen another controversial issue and you have made it okay to look at all that and decide where you stand and to trust your own guidance about where you stand, and also get us all to think about it more. Anyway.
Well, I just, you know, I really like the idea of understanding what is the origin of the belief system that we're following and questioning the belief systems. You know, I have a whole talk I do about beliefs and how it's direct observation is so much more beneficial in life than belief or living from belief. And so, you know, when I decided to read that part in the Untamed book, I wanted to go all the way through what she came up with in research, because you can discover the same thing. Those of us who have been alive long enough saw that happen.
Yeah.
Right? We know there was almost no white evangelical voting block until that happened. How did it happen? Well, I mean, because the truth of it's there to read in our history, but most of us aren't taught that history. We're taught what to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know,
so
turning
true.
Inside, doing your own research, learning to question things, question everything I say, question everything you hear anywhere, and use these tools to refine your access to and ability to trust that internal guidance.
Right. Well, it got all tied together in the end, and it's 1 o'clock. Thanks, Dr. Tim.
All right. Blessings. Thank you so much for the call. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Good show. What's the book that you were referencing, The Untamed?
That's the name of the book.
Okay.
Untamed by Glennon Doyle.
Okay.
And I was reading the particular segment titled Decals, D-E-C-A-L-S.
Okay. Awesome.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great show.
All right. Thanks. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, April the 8th, 2021. And their call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael just a minute to get dialed in. I was not familiar with that particular Dr. Seuss book either, and so I looked it up, and it actually allows you to read a couple of pages in it. And it's amazing. I mean, it is like the opposite sides of every situation. And so I think I'm going to get that book and read it. Even though it's a child's book, I think there's something in that buttered bread for all of us to learn. And it's actually called the Butter Battle Book by Dr. Seuss. And welcome, Michael. What I was just talking about is Dr. Tim had mentioned a book. We were talking about, you know, seeing things on, you know, viewing situations from different angles, different sides. And the book that he mentioned that brings it out really good is the Butter Battle Book by Dr. Seuss. And, you know, one of the things is that us on this side of the wall, we're yooks. Those on that side of the wall are zooks, and it's time that you learned what they did wrong. And it's all about that they buttered their bread on the downside instead of the upside. It's like,
yep,
it's like
perfect. As easy as it is.
yeah. So welcome.
The
non-being
mind can use any excuse to find somebody else to blame. So welcome, everybody, to the show. Honored and delighted that we get to be here once again to carry on this conversation. Been some long days happening and some long nights, lots of processing happening for us, and it's awesome, although sometimes can lead to a little fatigue. And fortunately, we've been taking more time to take care of ourselves. Actually get Jeannie to come in here once or twice a day and put her hand in the oven and take a rest now. How cool is that? And I acknowledge you, Jeannie, for being more and more willing to take care of yourself. It's awesome.
Thanks.
And oh, you're welcome. And deserving, as Dr. Tim would say. So the conversation moves forward into every angle of the non-functioning mind, the non-human mind, the one that we call carbon-based memory or ego, that simply replays whatever's in it. Doesn't matter what's going on or who's involved. You know, the ego changes enemies like, you know, you change socks. Today it's this person that's on the other side of the world that I hate, and tomorrow it's that little kid in the bed in the other room in my house. It's the one that I call my kid. I mean, anybody will do if a reality based in hostility or fear resonates and moves. So by your brand on the wrong side, you become the enemy. And it's just amazing to watch that play out and to realize that, you know, it's really time in America where, you know, I mean, there's so many people out there calling, literally calling for civil war, arming themselves. It's like, let's get restored to human life. Let's get back to being and functioning out of love and realizing that, you know, the truth is we're all the same. We all butter our bread, unless we're vegans or are maybe avoiding gluten. Who knows? But anyway, lots of directions to take that conversation in. And we're still working on this idea of blockage of truth from the book Why Is This Happening to Me Again? If you're following along with us, we're on page 53. And you know, we've gone through several topics in detail and recognizing that most people live in this dilemma of the realities that their mind constructs and convinces them are actually what's going on out in the world leaves us in a pretty crazy place sometimes. And in that crazy place, oftentimes there's pain. And we think that the pain is caused by what's going on outside of us, when we realize that pain is just an energy alert that there's something going on inside of us that doesn't belong there, then everything begins to change. But there's a huge amount of inertia to overcome, to recognize that and to always function out of the recognition that my pain is internally caused, and I can put an end to it. Recognizing the power of words and how words cause our minds to use certain information to produce their perceptual constructs, which we call reality, and that when we pretend that we're not responsible for our own realities, we tend to project the content literally of our own brain cell structure into our brain's image of others, and they quite literally show up in our mind with our problem attached, except that we swear that it must be their problem. And my favorite tongue-in-cheek line there is, well, you'll notice if you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people, you're the one that was there every time. It's about you. It's not about them. And now we're into looking at and putting the request forward that we honor truth rather than live in blockage of truth. So we've been talking with the character Richard about this idea of blockage of truth and how we torture ourselves, we give away our power, we hide our power in our brain's image of others, and as long as we stand in that place of blame, we hold on to and make unresolvable the very core of our pain, the very thing that pain is trying to warn us about. When we engage in blame, we hide that from ourselves. And Richard is just at the point where he's starting to admit, okay, every time I've been through pain, boy, he's back and forth. I know it's me. I need to work through it. And then he asks for some drugs. That's what we finished off yesterday. He's like, I want coffee. Give me a cigarette. And we point out that Rich is holding his breath. One of the most profound things you can do in doing your work is simply become conscious of and pay enough attention to notice when you're holding your breath. And recognize, you know, build the brain cells for that, what that means. Holding the breath means there's something I'm hiding from myself. There's something that I'm inhibiting from being used in generating my perceptual construct. And that's how we keep ourselves tricked and fooled. So I go on to say to Richard, when denial, projection, externalization, and holding your breath do not keep the truth hidden, and the drug hostility is confronted and made illogical, which is what we just did yesterday with Richard. As we've just done, you know, made that hostility illogical, the mind prompts us to turn to some other form of suppression, some other way to dissociate, to shut down the content we don't want to look at. So I offer Richard some feedback. Notice your stress level's up. It's elevated because you're confronting something painful. Your responsibility and your belief in victimhood. I suggest that caffeine and nicotine are ways you suppress your emotions. If you use those drugs to relieve stress and block truth, chances are you're addicted to them. The effect of drugs is to assist you in hiding from the truth by keeping up your illusions and projections. They seem to protect you from your pain. In truth, drugs function as anesthetics, distorting the mind's output and disguising your pain while destroying the body. So, you know, my background and training is in naturopathic medicine, and in naturopathic medicine, what we know is every drug is a disease disguised as a cure. Well, what do you mean, Michael? I know people that couldn't live without their drugs. I agree, there are. But you'll notice how long they've been taking that drug that keeps them alive but doesn't heal them. You know, if you had a substance that was truly healing, there wouldn't be an insert in the package that says, if you take this, be careful because this part might break and that part might fall off and this part might not function and you might have a heart attack. Cancel the thought. But, you know, you listen on TV to the relentless list of horrendous things that can happen, you know, to get rid of your pimple or whatever. And then you'll notice they always follow up with the suggestion. Check with your doctor to see if this is right for you. Like, you aren't supposed to know what's right for you. Your doctor is. Excuse me. If you have not educated yourself enough to be your own primary health care provider, then you need to change something in your life, and you need to start educating yourself. If, in fact, the substance you're being offered was a healing substance, then there would be an insert in the package, and the insert in the package would say things like, yeah, well, your hair's probably going to get shinier and less brittle, and your skin is going to be clearer and cleaner, and your bowels are going to work better, and your digestion's going to improve, and your heart function is going to be better. It's going to have a whole list of wonderful things that are going to happen. But when we get into treatment and we simply treat symptoms instead of offering people healing, then people settle for, okay, we found something in this narrow window that will make this symptom go away. Well, yeah, there may be six other symptoms that show up, but look at that. Look how successful we're. We got rid of that symptom for you. Well, that's true. We did tell you might have a heart attack as a result of getting rid of that symptom, but did you notice that pimple's gone? How cool is that? And the focus, the distraction is always about, well, look at what we did, rather than look at what's going on. And ultimately, we need to become responsible for our own lives, and part of the responsibility is you've got to stop hiding from yourself. You've got to stop hiding the truth. You've got to start being willing to honor truth, to let truth show up and acknowledge that when you're in pain and disturbance and upset, you have a problem, though your mind will always tell you. Or if you live in a standard mind in this culture, your mind will always tell you about and detail in great depth why somebody else is the problem in your life. Why you should throw that someone out of your life. Because look at what's wrong. It doesn't matter what you've done for them. It doesn't matter what you've given them. It doesn't matter how you've supported them. One little painful reality comes up that they're not willing to handle, and boom, they're gone. And they got a whole story about what's wrong with you. Pretty bizarre when you start looking at how this ego mind operates. And so we're here to encourage people to honor truth, own the truth, process through, acquire the tools, acquire the infrastructure that supports the operating of your mind and your body and your emotions and your being as they're designed to be supported. And that's the whole purpose of our conversation here. And if you haven't engaged in the forgiveness process yet, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's a button that says Start Here. Hit that button and start walking through all the instructions. We've got hours and hours and hours. And many people say, well, but can't you just give me the 3-minute version? I want to be finished with this issue yesterday. And I say, well, okay, let me just think about this for a second. You watched your mother and your father struggle through this issue, that issue. You heard how your grandparents on both sides struggled through that issue. You've been struggling with that issue for 50 years, and you want the three-minute cure. Well, you're living in dreamland. It's going to take a commitment, and it's going to take work to clean up those generational patterns. And, you know, I go back to the early days of doing this when nobody knew, nobody had the tools, nobody had the understanding. And I look at how much work it took to build the brain cells to come around to it, and how much easier it would have been if there had been someone I could have just had a conversation and said, well, what about this? And they could have gone, oh, here you go, and help me to build the brain cells. Oh, would the process ever been easier? So we're here to make it easier for everybody who's willing to step up to the plate and do their work. So welcome. We appreciate having your ears with us. And if you hear something that's meaningful and or especially would be meaningful to someone else, after each show is complete, we have archives that you can go to, download the show free, or create a link to the stored show and pass it on, share it with somebody else. And so, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Chat room is quiet, but Susan has put her hand up again. She talked to Dr. Tim earlier, but yeah, so she is on 610.
Hey, young lady.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Michael, thanks. I've been thinking about your and working with your new Power Person worksheet and thinking about the class we had. You're reading through stuff and you're introducing us to stuff, and somehow, at least with me, I don't feel prepared to say anything until I've actually worked with the worksheet. And I started it this morning, like a fresh new worksheet. And so do you want me to save questions about that for
No, go for it. If you're in the middle of it, if you're in the process.
Oh, I am. Yeah.
Rock on.
Well, in number two, you say that, is this the latest one I'm looking at? Yeah, okay. You say, we start out looking at our power person, and then you set up a very worksheet-like thing. In number two, you say, in my current situation, the exact goal I hold for blank. You're talking about a current situation, right? Like if I have a problem with, you like to use the word Charlie, so I'll just say Charlie. Okay, so here I am on Charlie. Bill, okay, thanks. Here I am working on Bill. Then I get to number four. Am I still working when it says, when a goal activates something in me based on fear, blah, 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 all the way down, list the pseudo-solutions my mind has engaged in. Am I still talking about Bill, or have
I'm working on
back?
That situation with Bill, and now so my mind's got a whole construct, perceptual construct, that I call Bill, and the normal person thinks it's outside of me. Someone who's been doing the work realizes that the body that they picture as Bill is a product of the firing of brain cells inside of them and tells them more about their own mind than about Bill. So from that step two on through to the end of the worksheet, I'm looking at all of the aspects. I'm like stepping back and, you know, you've seen projections of, let's say, a night sky and all the stars, and they kind of turn the sky and you see the stars from this angle and that angle and this side and that side. Well, that's what we're doing in the worksheet, is saying this power person dynamic is so deep and so controlling and so complex that we want to look at every aspect of it. So from that point forward, you're going through. Go ahead.
You're looking at it all with power person dynamics fully in consciousness, but using a present day person or issue.
Correct. And establishing awareness of how my power person dynamics are playing out with this person today that, of course, seems to have nothing to do with what happened when I was four, but is really controlled. My response and my perception, decisions, and behaviors are really controlled by my four-year-old brain.
Right. got it. Okay, good, thanks. Because I didn't know whether I was going to go back to a power person or stay with my bill. Okay, so you stay with your bill. All right, now in number six, you list a lot of pseudo-solutions, and it's
right.
a fantastic list. Some of them, though, have sub-things. How do I put it? Let me go down and find one. Okay, go to 35. Number 35, oh, and number 4 does it too. Checkbox, judge self, checkbox, others. That's number
right.
34. Okay, number 35, make
so
up
in
stories
this,
about.
So in this situation,
okay.
am I pointing my upset toward myself or toward others?
Okay,
I'm
going to
make a decision there.
One
and it might be both.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I was just, okay, good. I had to go back and look at it because suddenly there were no numbers and there were just boxes. And I'm thinking, why is this one separate? Why does this not get a separate box? But I'm getting it now. Okay. It may be just a matter of formatting, or maybe this is just a good road bump to hit. You know, it slows you down. It's like having to read what carbon-based memory is again. I mean, I was explaining
right.
to a friend, a new person has come onto our Zoom. The person is a cousin, a daughter of a cousin, first cousin of mine, who is a mime and a ballerina and an artist and a student of Christian Science and Byron Katie. She looked at your tool. She looked at the physical paper and said she got one of those things, French call it frisson, where she got goosebumps. She said, this is a true thing. This is a thing with integrity. She just, I forget the word she used, but, man, she said, I'm dying to get on the
show. She had the brain cells
to
see it.
She did a worksheet yesterday, right away. First thing, she does a worksheet, and the miracle happened. I got to tell you about this. I'm getting off track, but I have to tell you about this. So she does a worksheet on a terrible fear she has held for years about an old friend who adopted a daughter who was of a different ethnic color, skin color. And
right.
she said the un-PC thing of, where is your daughter from? And the mother, she perceived that the mother, her hackles went up. And she took it as a racist remark. You don't ask the question, where are you from, indicating you're not one of us or something. Anyway, right now, that's not a PC thing to do. Back then, she didn't know it wasn't a PC thing. For years, she has felt terrible about this friend. She tried to friend her on Facebook and establish a connection. No response. So she did a worksheet on it. And the enlightened goal, among other things like doing more worksheets, was to compose a letter to this friend and find a way to communicate with her. So she wrote an email, and she sent it. And as soon as she sent it, the friend responded and said, oh, my gosh, I can't even remember this. I can't believe you've carried that around for years. I have always admired you and loved you, and I'd love to be in touch again. And it was just a big nothing. And talk about big things are nothing. That was just the best lesson. So I hope that's okay that I took a tangent. But
no, that's perfect. That's perfect. You know, you remind me, and we've shared this on the show before. There's a guy up in Michigan who was in his late 60s or early 70s, and he found out that his brother out in California had cancer and was not going to live for long. And they hadn't spoken for, I don't even remember, 30, 35 years, something like that. And this guy was... didn't have a driver's license anymore, and he literally got his lawnmower fixed and he drove it to California to see his brother, and he couldn't even remember why they stopped talking.
Oh, like, my God. Yeah, that's
how bizarre
thing.
Is it? How bizarre can we yeah. get as humans? So
I know.
So no, I think that's perfect as a reminder.
Yeah. Her fear had grown so great that she was paralyzed. And, you know, this isn't a big episode of psychotherapy and telling an old story. She just did one worksheet. And
yeah,
she
yeah,
realized
I
it
am.
Was possible. Her level of upset, she said, that's not high enough. My level of upset is about 15. And at the end of it, she said it was down to 5. And she said, now I could breathe. So
Anyway,
that's awesome.
That's it. I
and
know.
It would be
it
interesting
is.
For her to step into and do the codependence work and see where she bought that kind of fear, because I guarantee there's a power person dynamic behind that.
Oh, absolutely. She is so gangbusters. We talked a long time this morning about, I mean, the whole talk about the gifts of COVID. COVID reconnected me with my family via Zoom in ways that we wouldn't have otherwise, because they're pretty outlying relatives with different lives going in different circles. And who's going to drive way to Northern Maine where she lives? And here we are on Zoom and we're getting to know each other. And then she's doing the work. And she's been doing her work in other ways all along, but this was tremendous. And she wrote back and she said, not only has this happened, but I just cannot wait to be part of this group every week. So she's really in there for,
a
good haul.
You know,
it is.
Yeah, one of the most common comments I get from people, and it's usually people who've got the brain cells, who've done the most work. And, you know, she sounds like she's been, as you said, she's been doing her work for years. But what happens when they bring this together? You know, one of my doctors is in holistic philosophy. Like, how does the whole thing work together? And one of the most common comments I get from people is, oh, my God, everything I've always known, I now understand. Oh, that's where that fits. Oh, that's why that. Oh, that's how that happens. It just puts it together. So I'm delighted that it's touching her and touching you and supporting opening a new connection with somebody to be cherished.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
I know, it's just great. So, okay, well, one more comment about the Power Person Worksheet and our classes. Not that we're going to do this. We're done with doing it, right? We're going on to do the other two classes that you had already planned, right?
We're moving forward. We'll see how it unfolds.
Yeah, okay. Because I think what happened is I couldn't be articulate at all until I had actually gone in there and started doing the worksheet. And
right.
I wondered if in the future when we do it, we have everybody have it out in front of them and we're actually each doing one as you talk through it so our questions come up. Maybe that wouldn't work. I don't know. It was just I felt as if we were kind of dead in the water in our responding to you. Here you were cranking and cranking and we were sort of like falling asleep or losing our place or, you know, just not engaged. I personally, I'll speak for myself, just couldn't get engaged till I pulled it out this morning. And instead of my worksheets, I did this one. And I, you know, anyway, that's just a thought of another way to present it. So,
And it's a totally new tool, in its first stages of development. So I'm going to need to learn to teach it and, how to present, how to process it. And so right now it's at the stage of building the brain cells. And of course, with the depth that each step goes, people are going to confront, even just hearing about it, it's going to stir and confront lots of things, which is going to, you know, bring up unconsciousness for people and resistance and all sorts of neat things. So,
Okay. Totally unrelated question. I have been feeling so much like that Fenelon author who saw the muck of his own darker side that I thought the thought came to me that I could just plain dismiss my ego mind. Use it as a functioning tool, but dismiss it. I see a thought. It's not a nice thought coming, and I see it going, and I notice it. Is that what you mean by the thinker apart from the thought, that we've stepped away enough to be an observer?
Well, that would be the first stage of it, but I don't think that just stepping back and becoming the observer is enough, because although I can observe it, it's still operational. And it's operational because it has, you know, remember one of the lines in the Course that says, you may wonder why you must look upon your hatred and realize its full extent. And it's because these things don't stand on their own. There's something underneath them. And so what this power person work sheet is about opening a space to look at what's underneath what we're observing. And it's as you begin to forgive or remove what creates that construct. First stage is I have to be able to step back and observe it, or else it's got me by the face and it's just, you know, I believe that's the way it is. So as I can step back and observe it, then I'm going to start to disassemble it through forgiveness or whatever other tools it might be, as this woman did. She sounds like she went into a sort of a responsibility communication circumstance. So once you can observe it, you can go, oh, that's what I've been doing. Then it's to take any and all of the other tools, including the rest of the worksheet, to disassemble it so I free my mind from it.
That is good. I guess I ask that partly because I feel as if I will never be able to stop these thoughts. There are so many of them. They're instantaneous trigger reactions. They may be very mild, but I realize I've made a judgment about someone, you know, walking down the road for some reason, or the way someone speaks or presents herself or himself. There's just so, I'm picky. I guess I'm really looking at how, just looking at the dark stuff. Yeah, well, all of it needs to be, what I've been practicing is saying, oh, I'm doing that. I choose another way to look at this person. And then I intend to be open, practice being open. Usually I feel a shift of being willing to be open. But you're right. The issue isn't gone. It needs a worksheet. It's like I could do worksheets all day long.
Who couldn't? You know, that's where, you know, if you go back to Yeshua and they were like, okay, you know, get us through, help us get finished. And he said, you can't storm the gate. You just can't do it. You got to do your work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody wants it to be, I want this done in 5 minutes. I have $5. Tell me everything you know. It's like.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just.
You realize the enormity of the history involved.
Yes, you do.
They talk about, I forget who brought forward the quote, but those who refuse to study history are bound to repeat it. Those who refuse to disassemble the power person dynamics are bound to repeat them. And that worksheet is really a look at history and what's happening in light of history with current events.
Right. On so many levels, right.
For sure.
Yeah. Another thought related to something we talked about yesterday, about the difference between needs, wants, and goals. I had a history professor once who made it very clear to us that when people react and form sides and get into war, they don't have needs, but they have felt needs. And he used to use that adjective. Felt needs to make sure that these were not actual needs, these were their reality. And I've never forgotten that, but what he was doing was talking about perception and limited reality as opposed to actuality. I just wanted to report that. He was a brilliant man.
Right.
So
the word, just to be clear, is F-E-L-T, as in feeling, felt needs.
Yeah. Felt
okay.
Or perceived,
got
you could
it.
Say perceived.
Makes sense.
Felt needs.
Yep.
Yeah, I wondered if that would be useful or not. I mean, I'm not trying to rewrite your worksheet. Probably I am. I don't know. Anyway, since we're beta testers, I was a beta tester for a music program for years, and I'd call up and say, I'd love it if it did this, or this doesn't work. And so if I seem a little bit arrogant, I apologize. With my
no
ideas,
I'm with you. I'm, you know, you'll notice that once again in the intensive, I made the request last night. If you've got feedback, please, I want it. That's how it develops. I can't develop this on an island by myself.
Well, it's huge. No wonder you can't. No, we're beta testers. I love thinking of it that way.
Yep.
It's an honor to be a beta tester. So one last question, if nobody else's hand is up.
Just one thought before we move on to that last question. What I hear when I hear this term felt needs is this is something that an individual has either through the automatic decision system or purposely, consciously, elevated to a very high level demand.
Oh, yeah. But the word need is a high level demand, I think. Unless you're starving to death. But I mean, most things are not needs. They are wants and goals that people use.
Right.
You said it yourself. You said you can manipulate people by using that word.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good input.
Thanks. And the other question is, I had a friend in college. It was an old lady who worked the desk in the music building, and she suffered from terrible anxiety. And I worked as a volunteer in hospice for many years. Tim and I both did when we were in Connecticut. And one of the things about terminal patients with Alzheimer's, or maybe they weren't terminal, but they had Alzheimer's, was anxiety. And it was anxiety
right.
that could not be, there was no comfort for them.
Right.
Because there was no reasoning with them. You couldn't do a worksheet
yep.
with them. What is that? Do you have any idea what that is?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would, how I would categorize it is if I've got somebody that's been living in the message, don't make me look at my life. Don't make me feel that. Give me a fifth of scotch. I don't want to deal with that. Let me just go to sleep. I don't want to look at you or deal with you right now. The mind finally gets a message and says, I'm not allowed to show this person what's going on in any way, shape, or form. So now we have Alzheimer's. The brain just stops functioning. But what underlies the reason it's not functioning? Decades of anxiety undealt with. Don't make look at my fear, my hate, my rage, my anxiety, my pain, my trauma, my responsibility. Don't dare. And so what do you have? You've got years of anxiety, and the instruction of the mind says, don't show me, don't know, I don't want to deal with this. And so finally the mind goes to the extreme of the instructions that were given and says, okay, well, I won't show you anymore. That would be my take.
So you're saying that anxiety itself is the cause of Alzheimer's, are you?
Well, I would say it's a big factor. I wouldn't say it's the cause of something like Alzheimer's. My take would be that it is the unwillingness to look at what's happening in our lives because it is based in thought disorders that produce anxiety, the act of telling the mind for decades, no, 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 and the mind finally obeying. So the result to me would be created by the fact that we weren't willing to look. I mean, everybody has thought disorders that produce anxiety. Some people deal with them and some people avoid them. And my take is in the long run. And this can go right down to our physical senses. I remember working with a guy in Texas. This goes back 30 or so years ago. And there was a guy in his 60s, and he'd worn hearing aids since he was, I forget, 9 or 11 years of age, something like that. And we were doing a still point session. He was really working on this, you know, having difficulty hearing. And he got in touch with being whatever age it was, 9 or 11, whatever age, and he was a little bit overweight, and people called him Piggy.
Oh,
and
no.
He just hated it. He didn't want to hear it. And within about a very short time, 10, 15 minutes, he was looking very startled and looking around the room like, what's going on? What's happening for you? He said, why is everybody shouting all of a sudden?
Oh, my God.
Nobody was shouting. At the age of 9, he had turned his hearing off. And here he is at 65, and he's finally allowed his hearing to come back on. And it sounds like
God.
People are shouting. So, you know, the senses follow instructions. That's it's basically a form of hypnosis. You know, if you watch the hypnotist, or if you get a good hypnotist, and they get somebody in a somnambulistic state of hypnosis, they can give that person verbal instructions that would match literally to the T every symptom of Alzheimer's, and that person will play out Alzheimer's. And then on command, you know, if the hypnotist's command is, and all of these symptoms will go away when I raise my hand and snap my fingers, they raise their hands or snap their fingers, and the mind goes back to normal. But you spend years going into a state of auto-suggestion, of self-hypnosis. No, I don't want to look at that. No, I don't want to feel that. No, I don't want to deal with that. The mind's going to finally say, all right. So that would be my take.
Boy.
And beyond that, as I'm looking at or playing in this world of I don't want to feel, I don't want to deal, I don't want to look, I'm sending messages to the different parts of my structure that are debilitating messages. And so let's say if it's I don't want to look and this person ends up being blind, they're going to do behaviors. You know, like, for instance, they might decide that they hate carrots and they're not getting any of the nutrients in the carrot that feeds the eye. And so now there's a reason, quote unquote, a reason physiologically why the eye deteriorates, because it doesn't have the nutrients that it needs. Why the brain deteriorates, because, you know, I gave my brain instructions, I don't want to do this, and so the brain, knowing how it works, is, well, okay, I guess we'll have to stay away from that, and let's do an excess of that that really raunchy fat that comes from palm oil. And so somebody says, well, see, we can see what's wrong with the brain. See, it's all filled, if we go in there and scrape it out, it's all filled with old palm oil. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, my gosh.
Michael, I had a thought. I don't know if this thought is useful, but you didn't record last time's meeting. I know I'm going all over the place, but this just popped into my head. You, Jeannie said in her email that you were going to re-record that class.
I'm going to redo it because the recording didn't take last night.
Yeah, but I was thinking so much of the recording was something, stuff you couldn't replicate, like people's questions and things. So that puts an awful burden on you, unless, I wonder if it could be like 2 hours of, all right, guys, we're all getting out our worksheets, read through this, do it personally, do your, and have it be sort of a guided worksheet with all of us following right along and actually writing. Those would be among the instructions that you would give. And then you would have a map of your whole, you probably have it mapped out anyway, but you were just simply reading it before, weren't you? And we weren't really participating. I guess that's the word. We couldn't quite engage because it went by too fast, and yet not fast enough in some ways, because we can read. You didn't have to read them to us and have us not doing anything. I don't know. I'm just going on and on. I'll put that in the hopper.
And again, you know, being as new as it is, it's a process of building brain cells. And so the main objective is to build the brain cells. And so I'm looking at doing another recording that will help with building the brain cells. And I'll put that in the hopper as a possibility.
Okay.
Yeah. Although I have the concern that it might be a six-hour worksheet then, so.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Right. That's true. Well, people could always pause it. You're not doing the worksheet. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, Michael, I almost don't know what I'm talking about, but anyway, it's a huge assignment for
you
to have
the feedback.
Do that all over. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, I think I've finished. So thanks for all your answers.
All right, we'll give that young man, Tim, a hug for us. Tell him we said hello. And
I will.
We'll see you on Saturday.
Okay.
1 o'clock. Okay, bless you.
Okay, we do have another hand up, but then I also got a response from our friend Angela in Kenya, and she said she did go back and listen to the archive on April the 5th, and as always, she appreciates the thought and consideration given to her issue. She says, I am encouraged to think that the world will indeed change once I apply the tools consistently. These past few days, I've tried to stay away from video clips and online posts that feed my chills. And yes, Michael was right. My chills means fear and anxiety. And that alone has made a difference in how I experience life in that time. It's true I may have hung out at the same level of work for a while, close to 17 years, but it's a testament on how effective the book and the worksheets have been for me. Nevertheless, I am glad to know that the possibility of going to another level through the codependence intensive lessons, and I will check out the website for more information.
Sweet.
Awesome.
And now, has she got access? I mean, does she have access to a computer that we could actually converse with her, or she has more questions to find them? Maybe make that suggestion.
That I don't know, but if she's going to do the online intensive by well, I guess those will all be downloads until the next live one. I don't know. I'll have to ask her. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. It'd be nice to hear from her and personalize the support.
Well, our next caller is area code 417. You're on the air.
Welcome, 417. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? I know you're calling from somewhere around Theodosia. Is this maybe Magda or Julie?
Yeah.
Somewhere
in the Ozarks. I had a couple of questions. I have one thought, and I was wondering how my question might fit into that thought that I have. So I'm going to give you the thought first. And the thought is,
I'm ready.
I have read where women, whenever we are, our awareness is about everything going on around us, in the house and out of the house, and everywhere else the kids are.
Right.
And then men, when their awareness is basically what's in the same room with them, what they're facing, what they're dealing with at the time. How on target is that?
It sounds just a little bit sexist to me.
Well, I'm not talking about sexist. I'm just talking about the way our brain and our body, our sensory perception is. As a mother, I know that when the children were outside, I knew where they were and what they were doing. And, for example, one time when the grandkids were over and the house was full of everybody, the grandkids just disappeared, all of them. And it was snowy and icy outside, and all of a sudden I knew they were at the pond. Everybody took off to the backfield after the pond and got them home where they froze.
Right.
Okay. And
But my take would be that that's not an exclusive thing to the female gender. Now, what you triggered me, I can remember back, I had a chef way back when I was in the restaurant business, goes back 50 years ago. And I used to just boggle his mind because I'd be, you know, I'd have a business trip. I'd be gone for a couple of days. I'd come back and there was a big event happening. And, you know, I had my finger on the pulse of it and I knew what we needed and such. And I'd say, well, it seems to me that maybe we're a little short of, you know, this item that, you know, we're going to need for this event coming up. And he'd say, well, no, actually, we don't have any of that left. And I'd say, well, isn't there some of that in the freezer over in the corner of the freezer number 4? And he would always just go, like, how do you know where all that, how do you keep track of that? And it's like, well, it's awareness that I think we all have the capability for. It's just what's important to us. And I think that, you know, as a caregiver, a mother who's in that level of responsibility and particularly in regard to her children, does that. But then I think about my children when they were small. They traveled with me. You know, there was one time period where I had my two kids on the road for a year, full time, just the three of us. And I held that kind of awareness with them as well. So I think it has to do with our functioning minds, the goals we have, the purpose we have in mind. And the level of awareness we have of our feedback mechanisms, our senses.
Okay,
so I agree. Category or the other would be my take.
Okay. Well, most men are, they have tunnel vision on their work and what they're going to get done and how they're going to get it done. Whereas women have
that's an interesting
to use their
thought.
Sensory perception. Yeah. Okay,
that's
the
an
second.
Interesting thought. Well, but you might want to look at whether there might be any projection to that thought and if there's any aspect of your life where you ever had tunnel vision.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. the second part of this is my experience with the worksheet.
Right.
Whenever, I just seem to be able to, I don't seem to be able to get past getting to a point where I can kind of relax because I'll take care of one issue and then here's another one. And then before I can finish with this one, there's another one. And before I can finish with that one, here's another one. And it's just like I'm going in circles here.
Well, if you go back and
you don't seem to be complete with it before I'm facing another issue.
Yeah. Well, if you go back and you read the book of Job, you'll see that that's very well pointed out. That principle is very well pointed out in the book of Job. And Job is basically the story of a man in the healing crisis. And if you remember, there comes a point where his process is so intense, which is what I'm hearing you describing, one issue after another, the Hydra effect. His process is so intense, he asks God for an intermission. Do you remember what the intermission was that he asked for? Give me time to swallow my saliva.
Oh, yeah, I remember that now. Yeah.
That's a pretty intense process he was in. and yeah, when you start doing your work, especially when you really start comprehending and really start moving, I mean, each issue that you open up, you get to deal with all the underlying dynamics of that issue. And when you, especially if you're the first one in your bloodline, if you're the early adopter, if you didn't have parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and cousins and uncles and aunts that were all engaged in your work, the work, and you're the first one who really steps in and does it, it's an intense process. It can be, you know, there can be times of tremendous overwhelm when you start opening parts of your mind that nobody in your bloodline has ever opened, and you decide to come into conscious relationship with those parts of your mind, and you let those energetic patterns that have created perhaps some horrendous diseases in your bloodline, when you allow those things to process through and process out so that you rid yourself of those diseases and or the possibility of it, it's an intense process. It's just,
okay, well,
and there's nothing even, there's nothing else that compares with it in terms of the intensity. You know, you think about someone who's decided to do a career and they're going to become world famous in, you know, whatever field. They're going to be a lawyer, a doctor, or whatever. That's nothing compared to stepping into your own carbon-based memory consciously with awareness, building the brain cells for the tools to clean up literally every generational pattern. I don't know, were you on the show a couple of weeks ago when I read a piece that I'd written? It was actually in my still point session that I was noticing that my jaw was clenching. And as I noticed that my jaw was clenching, I was given some input on dealing with that. Were you on the show when
I remember you talking about your jaw clenching, but I forgot what you said.
Well, let me just share with you what I wrote as a result of that, because it applies to all of us, and it gave me a new perspective, a new level of insight as to what needs to be done, what it takes to really clean up a life. So the first thing that came in that particular still point session for me was that, you know, I'm contemplating life. And you've heard me say it many times that Yeshua says, I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. And so the first opening in that particular session, I'm just looking at my notes from it, was the instruction or the understanding that life is love flowing through a cell. And that when we do things that restrict love from flowing through a cell, we're shutting down life. And I realized, you know, this was all part of the insight that came when I realized that I was clenching my jaw, and that along with that clenching of my jaw was the left side of the upper palate that was also contracting, and that my parietal bone on the left hand, you know, top of my head was also contracted and locked down. And what I realized was that was me restricting life moving through me. So then I was specifically given an instruction to make a request. And the request was this: let all the pathways for your love, speaking to the Creator, let all the pathways for your love be opened in me. For life is love moving through me. And then as I'm, you know, focusing on, and each time I took my focus away from what my jaw was doing, I would just unconsciously, I'd just be back to that clenched position. And what I was shown was, or what I was told, download I got was, that this clenching of the jaw is something that had gone on for many generations, and it had literally set this restrictive energy, this energy that restricted my life flow, had set that in the bones of my body. And so the next piece of information I was given was energy set by generations in bone takes time to release, time to heal, and or it takes grand willingness. And then I was given this next set of thoughts. If you do not know what I mean by set in bone, just pay attention to your thoughts. The next time you clench your jaw, your gut, or your fist, how much suffering and how much clenching in 30 generations, which is 1.6 billion of our ancestors. Are you open and willing to embrace all that has been locked in bone? Metaquiasin, which is a Native American phrase that means for all my relations. So it's like, am I willing for my whole bloodline to open and process through that? And my instant response was yes. I'm willing to open every shuttered jaw, every gut, and every fist, every held breath in my bloodline, so that all the pathways for the power of the active presence of the Creator's love can flow through me. I realize I can only rely on that. For my minuscule self that thinks it has power to handle every dissociated energy in just my own bloodline, surely I jest. And now I understand why I must wholly rely on the presence of love.
Yeah, I remember when you got to the part about it being set in bones, I was thinking, oh my goodness, that's why I'm having such problems there. And
you're an early adopter. You know, who in your bloodline can, and we've only got a few seconds left, so we'll just carry the conversation until the show cuts us off, but who in your bloodline could have ever had this, engaged in this conversation? Mom, dad, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, grandparents, great-grandparents, who could have had the conversation?
Right. Thank you, Michael.
So when you're the early adopter, it's like, you know, you're like the person who, that story about the farmer who goes out to the town center and brings in workers at 8 in the morning, and then others at 4 in the afternoon, pays them the same, and the workers who go in at 8 are like, why don't we get more because we work on, and the creators or the farmer says, you know, I gave you what I told you I'd give you. Isn't it up to me to give generously to someone else if I choose to do that? And then if you look a little later in that particular scripture, the creator goes on to say, or the farmer goes on to say, and you're going to use my generosity as your excuse to be hostile? Kind of like, are you nuts? So